Well, thank you. And I am so delighted to be here at Capital City Fruits. And Brendan just gave me a walking tour so that I could see where probably a lot of my tomatoes and peppers and other things that I enjoy on a regular basis are coming from. And I really want to thank your entire family. Really, the idea that we're here in a third-generation business, started by your grandfather,
right,
built by your father, and now with you and your three brothers, it really warms my heart. My father was a small businessman, and really small. I mean, this is way beyond anything that he ever dreamed of, but he printed fabric for draperies, and then he went out and sold them. And so he had a printing plant, and it was, you know, really him and day laborers, and then occasionally my mother and brothers and I that would, you know, work the squeegee and, you know, go down the silk screen, and then you lift it up and you move and you put it back down and you keep going. But he was a person who really believed in hard work, and he also was a waste not, want not kind of a guy, and he provided a good living for us. And it's kind of like your family here, Brendan, that you know, my grandfather was a factory worker, and then my father was a small businessman, created a middle-class life for his family, urged us to, you know, get our education and make our own way in life. And to me, really, small businesses are at the heart and are the backbone of the American economy. And I wanted to come here on my very first trip to Iowa because although our country has come back from tough economic times, thanks to a lot of hard work and sacrifice by Americans and their families, we need to do more than just get by. We need to get ahead and stay ahead as individuals, as families, as businesses, and as our country. And so in this campaign, I want to find ways that we can make sure we're building on the success and the hard work and the innovation of Americans. But in order to do that, I want to hear directly from people like those sitting around this table who can tell me about their own businesses, about their dreams, about the obstacles, the hurdles, and the successes that you have experienced. Because as good as it is that we've kind of dug ourselves out of the hole of the Great Recession, we're not up and running yet. And unfortunately, the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. And we need to reshuffle the cards and begin to play a different hand, a hand that includes everybody who is willing to work hard and do their part. In preparing for today, because I want my campaign to figure out how we're going to jumpstart small business again, I gathered up some statistics and some research, which is the kind of thing I like to do, try to figure out, you know, what's actually happening. And American business startups are down. Small business creation and expansion is down. But the figure that really caught my eye is a recent World Bank survey of the entire world, where now America ranks 46th in the world in how hard it is to start a new business. We need to be, we have to be number one again. For so many decades, it was kind of taken for granted that we would be, and we were. But slowly over time, it's become more difficult, more expensive, more red tape, unnecessary regulations, that has really put a damper, and then that was unfortunately exacerbated greatly by the effects of the Great Recession, where a lot of banks stopped lending. They stopped lending to small businesses. They stopped lending to people with good ideas. They stopped taking chances on real opportunities for Americans, and unfortunately, we can see the results, because lack of credit, other obstacles are standing in the way. So this is part of the, you know, the four areas that I rolled out yesterday. I want to build the economy of tomorrow, not yesterday. And I want to make middle class mean something again. And you cannot do that if you don't have small business really building and driving economic growth. Number two, I want to do what I can to strengthen families and communities. Well, we're in a perfect example of not only a successful business, but a strong family that built this business and has taken it to, you know, new levels unimagined by the grandfather who started it. I want to fix our political system. I want to get things done. I'm willing to work with people who have good ideas, who are on any side of the political divide. But we have to start breaking down the divisions that have paralyzed our politics. And we have to get rid of the unaccountable money that is flooding into our political system, even if it takes a constitutional amendment. And we have to protect our country from the threats that we know about, that we see, and the ones that are, you know, on the horizon. So in this campaign, I will be offering specific ideas about how to help small businesses, how to jumpstart them, how to grow them. I want to also talk about balancing family and work, and I hope, Brendan, you'll give me some of the specifics about how you take care of your employees, because I met people who've been here for 10, 15, 20 and more years. So you've bred a lot of loyalty and commitment in the people who work here. I want to figure out how we help workers get the skills they need for the jobs of tomorrow. And we started at Kirkwood Community College, the Monticello campus yesterday. I got some great ideas, and I want to take those ideas and really embed them in a comprehensive strategy, but I need to hear from you, because what are the skills you need? Who are the people that you're trying to recruit? And what are the challenges that you are facing? And I want to make sure that we really, at the end of the day, and I met children and grandchildren before I came in here, at the end of the day, this for me is really about doing everything I can to make sure that every child, not just my grandchild, but every child, has a chance to live up to his or her God-given potential. That's what I was raised to believe by my church and my family, and that's what I want to really emphasize in this campaign. So I'll have a lot more to say about this as the campaign goes forward, but before I roll out my policies, I want to hear from people who are on the front lines, and in this case, small business, and hear directly from you so that your experiences and ideas can be embedded in what I'm proposing, not just for Iowa, but for the entire country. So, Amelia, you're going to kick us off?
I'm going to kick you off. And my first question, and I'd like to make this question to the entire group, is, you know, what do you see in the future for your business? Are you growing? Have you retrenched and now you're going to grow? You know, obviously we're in this wonderful facility, and right, we'd love to hear how that came about. You know, what are the challenges that you see, you know, coming down for your business, and what are the opportunities?
Why don't we start with you, Brendan?
Well, I can tell you I would not have gone deep into debt if I didn't feel this business had some growth potential. So, yeah, we're growing. The thing that's holding us back, actually, is finding the talent we need. So I'm glad you brought up the skills gap, because there's a lot of people that are unemployed over here, and there are people, there are jobs open here, and there's a mismatch of skills. They don't have the skills for the 21st century jobs. So I think it's really critical that we try and identify what those skill gaps are, and then meet those, train those people how to do those jobs of this century, and that would help us grow. I don't know if you guys are all feeling the same thing.
Brendan, before we move on to Katie, could you just describe the skills you're looking for that are absent? Because, you know, I was impressed yesterday at the community college about how they're trying to work to prepare people for the jobs that businesses want. So yeah, explain what you mean by the gap.
Well, truck drivers are huge. Everything that is bought and sold in America, almost everything is brought to you by a truck. Mm-hmm. And you need drivers to drive those trucks until Google invents some, you know, imaginary truck that doesn't need to drive. But right now they don't have that. So we need drivers, and I think it's a shortage of something like 30,000 drivers throughout America. And they're very good paying jobs. You know, all of my drivers made over $50,000 last year. So mm-hmm. those are jobs that some college graduates don't make that kind of money. So I think it's really critical that we tell people, hey, these are options for you. These are opportunities you have. You don't have to go to college necessarily to make a great living. But a lot of people can't get in a semi-truck and drive it. So
right. There
needs to be training in how to do that. And identification, that's a great job for Americans to partake in.
I'm glad you said that. I saw hundreds of trucks on I-80.
Absolutely. Yeah.
and they were all heading to deliver something that we all are waiting to get.
Yeah.
So
people don't think about that.
That don't.
But everything comes by truck.
Yesterday in Davenport, I met with a young hospital administrator. He told me they have 300 openings for RNs and CNAs. So yeah. Nurses, truckers, two examples of where there's a mismatch, right?
Definitely.
Katie?
I own Happy Medium. It's an interactive advertising agency, so we do all things traditional, but also a lot of web development and social media. And I founded it 4 years ago. In the last 4 years, we've had 800% growth, revenue growth. So I've gone from 1 to 16 people. And even with that, and although we've had a ton of revenue growth, it's still difficult to find sometimes the revenue resources to add new jobs with some of the, you know, tax restrictions we have and everything like that. So it can be difficult also to find a building, you know, for us to have enough space in. I bootstrapped the entire company. So even with all of those things, and Des Moines is a fantastic, you know, business community, and we have a lot of success, it can still be very restrictive. So, you know, anything we can do to bring some of that down so I can still keep adding jobs, you know, have a better building for us. And for us, it's, you know, web developers we really struggle to find and have them educated as technology is developing, especially here in Iowa, and even just things like fiber internet, you know, having us have a faster source to be able to do our jobs. It's all online.
Katie, could you provide any specifics about both the taxes and the physical facility challenges that you have faced?
Sure. So with our, you know, facility, we are better in a sort of open environment and things like that. But just things like, you know, with taxes, we pay over 40% at the rate we're at in taxes. And that's very difficult. I would much rather be able to raise revenue for my employees. Or right now I have to choose between you know, seeing my child more at home or me doing more work at the office because I can't add a job right now with that. And so it just can be incredibly restrictive between you have federal and state and, you know, workforce, and there's so many different taxes that we have to pay. And we're very fortunate to be a successful company, and it still is incredibly restrictive.
But you don't have any of the licensing issues. As a web developer, you know, one of the issues that people are raising with me is how so many professions are now subject to licensing that weren't 10, 20, 30 years ago, and that's money on the front end, it's a lot of time, and there's just a patchwork across the country. I mean, to become a cosmetologist in one state takes 500 hours, but only 300 in the state next door. Right. There's just this really difficult terrain that you have to try to navigate, but
sure.
You don't have that problem.
For our company, there's not a lot of licensing. Mm-hmm. Ours would be, we develop a lot of websites, so our clients may see a lot of that, but specifically, you know, our web developer, our lead developer is a Spanish major because he had to teach himself. There's just not the education available right now for those resources, and or definitely not in Iowa, you know. Or
well, could you take advantage of, like, you know, if the community college or one of the universities or even a private consortium set up web development, coding, those kinds of classes, that would be an advantage for you because it would help you with your workforce development.
Absolutely, definitely. And somehow expediting those curriculum approvals, a lot of times that can be a very long-term, up to even 4 year.
And who has to approve the curriculum?
Is it the state? Within the schools often.
Within the schools, okay.
And I'm not sure if the state does. Yeah. But 4 years in web development time is
too much.
Completely ancient.
At the end of 4 years, you're
right.
Out of date.
Yeah,
right.
And we would be happy to fund sending our people to programs and things like that, but at this point, the best options are self-teaching for the most part or training internally, and that would be a huge advantage to us.
Well, you know, I support President Obama's plan for trying to get the costs of community college as low as possible, including to free, if that is doable. But I also think we need to have a special focus on web development, software development, coding, the kinds of things you're talking about. And community colleges can do that. We've got some, in New York, we've got some private academy people setting up and teaching coding, you know, over a period of weeks. Mm-hmm. It's intensive. I think it's like 12 hours a day, something
right.
like that. But I think you really put your finger on something in terms of skills for the jobs that you're looking to increase. So.
Absolutely.
How about you? Tell us about your business.
So probably the newest business owner at this table. I purchased a bowling center and restaurant recently, within the last year. And kind of on the contrast of, I know, Brendan kind of talked about supplying, I'm kind of the opposite end of that. So they've been supplied their jobs, and then they come to my bowling center for entertainment. So I kind of thrive on the after bank hours for everyone who's at home with their families or on the weekends to come enjoy my business and what I do. I'm a little bit smaller than Brendan. It's about me and about two others.
Did you have trouble financing? Did you buy an existing facility?
Yes. Right? So our existing bowling center there in Adel has been there since 1957. Mm-hmm. And it was run by multiple families, including part of mine throughout the years. And just recently, in high school, I worked there, went to college. Told the owner then, I said, call me first whenever, you know, I love this place. So one day I got a phone call, you know, when do you graduate? So I said, well, you know, it's actually coming up. So a lot of times I was driving back and forth helping her and learning a lot and kind of to hopefully take over that. So the biggest barrier I've found is that with not a big track record, I've worked in a bowling alley for many years, but not owned it, is the financing. Is finding the bank or the institution or somebody to say, okay, you know, this is what you're doing, this is what the business is doing, but it's you that just we don't know about. So I wish there was a little bit more credibility for the business that I'm I'm in, and also to myself, you know, a college graduate, about all we have is debt, which shouldn't hinder me from finding my dream. And I went for education in college, so I could teach, but I fell in love with bowling, and I had these great opportunities to do so. That two totally different things.
How much debt did you graduate with? You know, the average four-year graduate in Iowa graduates with nearly $30,000 in debt.
I went to the University of Northern Iowa, so did a lot of my family, and the last figure I saw was right around just under $40,000.
Wow.
And I actually took a lot of college credit in high school, so I entered a little ahead of the game, but over that time, I wanted to do a little bit of everything, so but then I fell in love with something outside of it, so, you know, I'm not using the full potential of what I went to college for, but I'm using a lot of things I learned in college, mm-hmm. which is the benefit, I mm-hmm. think. So unfortunately, my biggest expense at my business is my student loans. So on top of my mortgage, even, that I'm paying, is my student loan debt. So that, to me, seeing new Kickstart business, new businesses, I think would prosper more if the barrier of entry was more focused on younger people. New college graduates, they may not want to go to big corporations for 10, 15, 20 years before they start their business. A lot of us have those ideas now, fresh ideas that we want to do it now, and we have the motivation to. And I think that's what I see as a big barrier for my age group, my college graduate peers. We want to do a lot of things. So, that's my biggest thing is the barrier of entry and that financing.
You know, this is a really important point. We all know about the student loan debt, but I've never heard anyone so persuasively link it to the slowdown in business startups. Because if you're a young person in your 20s, maybe early 30s, and you've got the energy, which you clearly do, and you've got the passion, and you're carrying 30, 40, maybe even more, thousands of dollars of debt, that's a real barrier. And that's another reason why we've got to tackle this student debt problem. Because I do think, in addition to everything else that we know about it, you've given me an insight that nobody else has. And I'm grateful to you, because that is a really important piece of information.
That's the first thing that banks look at is the debt against you. And unfortunately, the investment debt of education is going against people. And it, you know, that's not much of an investment.
Investment in debt, that's a very good way of putting it, because it's not like your mortgage, which is an investment debt. You know, you're just standing there saying, look, I'm good collateral. I've gotten my education. Yeah. Give me a break, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And to add to that, actually, one of the things that we know is a large proportion of Iowans and Americans in general really lack assets. And when you have a $40,000, you know, dollar debt that you're dragging along, all that money that you could have saved towards buying a home, buying a car, investing in a business is going towards servicing that debt. So it's kind of that double, you know, we certainly know that there's a lack of access to capital. Both for being able to borrow it, but also being able to accumulate it.
Mm-hmm. And you see that a lot at the center that you run, don't
Correct.
You?
Correct, yeah. Yes. We definitely do, and we work with with mostly women, and largely women of color. So we certainly see a lot of women with significant school debt, but a lot of women for whom the idea of taking on that debt is enough to keep them out of school and of retraining, et cetera.
So. Leslie.
I am a very small business. At this point, it's just me. I just started this business in the last year, and it's furnished short-term rental housing. Before that, I worked in Des Moines and had another woman business partner, and we worked for 19 years, primarily doing renovating substandard inner city housing for women and children. We saved a couple buildings from being torn down in downtown Des Moines. And we didn't have lots of problems finding loans initially. I mean, we did all right, but when the downturn came, it got very difficult, and we were very lucky that we didn't have any big refinancing that had to happen at that time. Because I know other players that were much larger than us that were having problems. So we were lucky in that.
Has the credit time. Situation improved in your market?
You know, I
got
to tell you, we sold that company that we had built, and I funded my own company. I haven't even gone to the banks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've been fortunate enough to be able to just reinvest my own money in what I wanted to do. And that's how I've handled that.
And what do you hear, or you too, Amelia, what do you hear from other small business people? Has the credit crunch eased at all, or is it still really difficult?
I hear from some of my subcontractors that it's still difficult for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
that's what I hear.
That binds a small business. They have to be able to get a line of credit or mm-hmm. something. They have to have... Mm-hmm.
To go off that, you know, my bank is not down the street from my business. You know, it's a local bank. And as a person, you know, you get a credit card and that builds your credit, and then you get a loan, a car loan or a home loan or mortgage. And what I've seen at this bank and multitude of other banks is you have to get the business loan before you can get the business credit card. So in my eyes, that's totally kind of backwards. You know, to gain the credit, you have to go in debt instead of vice versa. So I don't know if anyone else has kind of seen that, but it's hard to get unless you have the business loan, the debt already against you, it's hard to get a business credit card, which to me sounds a little backwards.
Yeah.
But so yeah, going off that, it kind of just doesn't seem like it's a straight path. We're kind of taking too many detours to get to that.
And that adds cost as well as frustration.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jennifer, what about your business?
I own a small boutique called Eden Soaps and Lotions in the East Village.
That's where I get my shaving.
Yes. Thanks
good
for your business.
Right?
But prior to opening up my business, I worked at Yonkers, which is a local department store, all through high school and college. And I applaud you, Bryce, for doing the business right after college, because I didn't have the guts to do that.
Yeah.
I came to Des Moines to work in the corporate office for Yonkers and gained great experience. And then when Saks bought us out, the buying office was no more. We all lost our jobs. And it was just the push out the door I needed to open up my business. So I funded Eden with my small $5,000 severance package and had barely anything when I first opened. People are like, you're going to have a few more things to survive. And I'm like, I know, I'm just starting. I'll be fine. But I slowly just grew organically. I never did go to a bank and ask for a loan. I'd heard horror stories of people, you know, starting out too big and then you never get ahead. And I just really wanted to establish and hear feedback from people on what they wanted to see in the community too. So one of my obstacles though is starting, because we have a unique opportunity in Des Moines, because, well, for my particular business, we don't have a Nordstrom's or a Neiman's or a Saks or anything like that. So I'm trying to fill that niche in my business. And so I'm going to Kiehl's or larger businesses and, you know, I want to sell your product. And I was getting rejection letters like, we don't want to distribute in Iowa. I'm sure you understand. And I'm like, well, no, I don't understand. We're not all driving our tractors here. You know, we want products too. We don't have to, you know, buy everything online. So I just, you know, just started gaining more and more momentum and slowly and just kept persevering and sending out my letters, and finally, you know, people are like listening, and now we were able to purchase. We outgrew our little space that we started, and now we've been in our new building 5 years, and we did purchase our building, which is wonderful, and we did go to the bank to get a loan for that. But you know, it's been so fun to see this community. It's basically like Main Street America where we are. There's one chain in the neighborhood, which is a Jimmy John's sandwich shop. Everything else is locally owned retail restaurants, and you know, someone has a unique idea and they're going for it. So I would just love to encourage more people to do the same, so we get more and more momentum and more people coming into the neighborhood. And we've gotten some great write-ups in Forbes magazine, and I think a lot of it has to do with the East Village community, you know, which is so unique to see in the country today. Like, usually when you go to you know, kind of a neighborhood like ours, it's almost like a glorified shopping mall where there's lots of chains. You don't have all these independent, you know, businesses. So I feel very fortunate to be a part of it.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. That's a great story.
How many people work for you now?
I have 3 employees now. Mm-hmm. I have one girl who's in college who will come back and work in the summer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're small. Like you, yeah. Just, I don't... Mm-hmm. You know, I do get sort of some pressure on the outside of when you're going to open up your second store, your locate, you know, and sometimes I feed into that, but other, you know, it's the balance of life too, and I love going to work every day, and having another location would complicate my life, and maybe I will want to do that someday, but I'm just not ready to do that right now.
That's a really important point, this whole work balance of life issue, because you are able to make these decisions because you're the owner. Mm-hmm. You're the person who gets to call the shots, just as all of you around this table are. But I would like to just hear a little bit more about some of the life balance trade-offs. And maybe starting with you, Amelia, because you do work with so many women, mm-hmm. and as you pointed out, a lot of them get deterred from going to college because they don't want to take on debt, but then they're caught in a, you know, unfortunate cycle where they're not going to really get ahead as fast or as far as they might. And the same on the work balance. I mean, if you have, I'm at a single mom of 3 kids, a divorced mom yesterday at Kirkwood, who's going back to school, and it really took a lot of energy to piece together all of the different amounts of aid and what she needed to be able to try to get the education so she could get the better job. And that interferes with people starting businesses or joining small businesses because they don't maybe feel that they have enough security. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. And you actually got ahead of me on my next question, which really I wanted to talk about, you know, particularly for female business owners, how does being female in particular affect you know, the opportunities that you have in business. We have a women's business center, and our students definitely struggle with those very same issues. Most of our students are employed while they're, you know, working on their business plans. So we offer, we try to offer free childcare, and we teach all our classes in the evening and on weekends, and we really try to make it fit, you know, fit into their life schedule and their journey. But absolutely, I mean, we definitely see, especially our lower income students really struggling with questions of, you know, how to pay for quality childcare. Mm-hmm. I think medical expenses is something that we're still dragging along. And you know, you mentioned basically access to credit, right? And a lot of the women that we work with are still dragging along some of those issues that they took on during the recession, things like medical collections and those things. And those, it's kind of adding another layer, making it even more difficult, because you know, maybe they lost their job, or you know, they had low income to begin with, and then you know, also took on these other expenses. And so it's just kind of putting us further and further back, and we're trying to really help them kind of see their way through that.
Yeah. I noticed quickly when I started Happy Medium and started to interview people that, of course, in the beginning they were very concerned about how long the company was going to last, and it made it very difficult to get good talent, and it was a very chicken and the egg situation. And then I was the first person in our company to have a baby. And once I did that, I realized how just incredibly difficult it is to try and balance everything and everything that comes along with that. And so I decided that I want every single person at my company to always feel just as excited and comfortable with their personal life and their work life. So at Happy Medium, we pay all of our employees 100% during maternity leave for all 12 weeks. And then we have 2 weeks paid paternity leave for parents. And now we've had people utilize that, and they've just been so thankful. And it's just such a different experience for them on their maternity leaves, with, you know, that release of not worrying about funds or rushing to get back to work. So you can get your paycheck. You can just take the time to, you know, be with the human that you just brought into the world, whether they're adopted or you had them yourself. And I think that's so incredibly important. And I really feel strongly that that is a huge reason that we are retaining the incredible talent that is at my team. We also have unlimited vacation, so those that don't have families have a lot of benefits on their own as well and things like that. But I hope to be a champion to show other companies that even though we're a tiny 16-person company, if we can do that, any size company can do that.
Well, boy, you are right on my wavelength, because, you know, look, we are the last developed country in the world that has no national paid leave for parenting, for illness. And what we know from the few states that have done it, California being most notable here, is it builds loyalty. You know, if you really analyzed turnover in a lot of businesses where you have to retrain somebody, where you first have to find them and then you have to retrain them, making your employees feel that you care about these milestones in their lives and you give them the chance to, you know, have a child, adopt a child, recover from a serious illness, take care of a really sick parent, and get a period of time that's paid, just cements that relationship. So it is, it's an issue that I feel strongly about on just personal terms. You know, I've written about this. I was a young lawyer in a relatively, by our standards in Arkansas at the time, it was a medium to large firm, like 12 lawyers, you know, nothing giant like we have today. And I got pregnant, and nobody said anything to me, and I didn't say anything to them. We didn't know what to say to each other. And so, I mean, I'd walk down the hall going to the conference room or the library or something, and, you know, I would see one of the partners coming, and he'd go, oh, you know, just kind of look away. And so we had no leave program, nothing. But when the time came, they said, well, what do you want? And I said, well, you know, I've read the literature, and 3 or 4 months is what you need to really bond with your baby. And they said, well, okay, can we call you? I said, of course you can call me, but I think that you have really set a high standard. Now, you know, trying to figure out how we get there and how companies that might have more challenges live up to that is going to be the issue. But I think here at Capital City Fruit, Brendan, you provide paid vacation and paid sick leave, right?
Yep.
And you have a
401k plan.
401k.
All the basic benefits. The thing that we're really struggling with is health insurance. When we went to the when we went to the broker last year, he said that they're going to increase it 18%.
Wow.
18%. Well, that's more than 5 times inflation. Most of our employees are getting about a 3 or 4% wage increase, so you can't keep up if it's going up that high every year, and they're only getting 3 or 4%. More and more of our resources are going into health insurance. It takes away from the ability to do mm-hmm. other benefits. Mm-hmm. And we finally did some negotiation and got it down to 13%, which is still 4 or 5 times inflation. And because of that, we had to raise deductibles and we had to raise out-of-pocket maximums. And I'm really concerned that going forward, we're not going to be able, our employees won't be able to afford it. They won't be able just to pay the basic premiums because mm-hmm. it's getting so out of hand.
Well, I'm concerned about that too. I mean, I think, you know, we have a lot of work to do to make sure that private employers like yourself who are buying through a broker and making your own contracts, right, for these benefits, don't suffer disadvantages in either pricing or benefits going forward. And we have to get to a level of analysis here that is really important because it would be interesting to find out why in Iowa a well-established company like yours is being asked to pay so much more for a private plan. And I've begun to do this analysis. I can't obviously tell you what the results are, as I'm just beginning it. But, you know, in some of the states that adopted the Affordable Care Act exchanges and adopted the Medicaid expansion, which is, as you know, fully funded by the federal government, their percent increase for private employers is really low. And why is that? Because hospitals have other sources of revenue. Hospitals are getting paid for uncompensated care. So poor people show up, and instead of it being absorbed by the hospital, passed on to their insurer, which in turn passed it on to Capital City Fruit, there's now another source of it. So I'm not sure that's the only reason. I've got to, as I say, spend more time looking at this. But I am committed to trying to, you know, build on what works in the Affordable Care Act, because 16 million people now have insurance who didn't have it. And when I was in Mount Vernon yesterday, you know, a woman, local businesswoman came up and she said, "I don't know what I'm going to do. My 26-year-old son has been on my policy now." And you've been on your parents' policy?
I'm still under 26, but, you know, I'm engaged to be married. They don't have a family yet, but that difference in, you know, 26, it's like,
yeah,
bye. And then as a small business owner,
right,
going, if you to hire a full-time employee and to pay those benefits, that has to be me, because if I pay someone else, they have to be doing everything as well, because it is a big step,
right,
for a full-time employee. And right now I'm not in need of that besides myself. Mm-hmm. And my staff and the couple of people who work for me are great. They love doing what they do, and they do it wholeheartedly. And I'm really proud to say that we pay, you know, I pay my kids. I call them kids because they are a little younger than me. Same age, but
half.
I know.
I call them babies.
But you know, we all work together, and I know what they're going through. I know mm-hmm. what I've gone through as working in high school, working in college. You know, working, and you know, I've. Know a lot of people who are supporting families that come into my business and that also work for me, and I see that, and that right there is my biggest worry, is if I'm not married and my spouse doesn't have insurance or a job that does, you know, we could not work together at this business without something else with those
right.
benefits, because
right.
my business would I would be afraid of what my business, how shaky it would become. You know, I'm really stable right now, but that could really jumble up a lot of things just in the healthcare spectrum.
Yeah, it's a shame that healthcare is making us make decisions that are not business-based. You know, it's really frustrating.
100%. And like I say, I think, you know, like this woman was telling me, her son, you know, doesn't make much money at the job he has and would, you know, is going to lose her insurance. He's going to have to go into the exchanges. And I told him, I talked with him about, you know, looking to see what kind of subsidies or something you can get. So there are individual issues, and then there are business-related issues. And part of what I'll be doing during the campaign is looking for ways that we keep what works and what's lowering costs. I mean, as hard as it is to believe, healthcare costs have actually gone down, and healthcare inflation is lower than it's been. But that doesn't help you if you're the person facing the 18 or 13%, or you're off your parents' policy and you have no alternative. So we've got to figure out how we fill all these gaps. Yeah,
insurance,
Leslie.
Insurance companies now, do they compete across state lines?
Not yet, but I
because
think that's something
think
we
that's
should look at.
Because I would think that's a huge problem.
Yeah,
well,
that would help.
I think it's something we should look at. You know, there have been reasons in the past why states particularly opposed it, because mm-hmm. you know, they want to control insurance, life insurance, health insurance, any kind of insurance, and they have state insurance commissioners. I mean, you have a system here in mm-hmm. Iowa. Mm-hmm. and it's different than Illinois and different from Wisconsin and all the rest of it. But I think, Leslie, your point, if we're going to have a free market system, then we need a free market where we've got people competing on cost and quality, and that may be one of the things we need to look at. As I say, I haven't made a final, you know, determination myself, because mm-hmm. this has been the way it's been for a long time. But for example, I know that there's not as much competition in a lot of states as there should be, including
here,
in this state.
In this state.
You've got like three insurers you can choose from, that's it.
That's yeah. it. That's and it. And there was another one that opened up under the Affordable Care Act, which was a cooperative,
right?
And they didn't have a good enough estimation of how much they were going to be in demand, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a lot of people signed up for it because it was going to be a nonprofit cooperative, so that a lot of the costs that are layered on would not be in the cost of the insurance. And the fact is that people signed up for it, and then people who hadn't had medical care for a long time said, I need a lung transplant, I need a kidney transplant. They were being asked to do these incredibly expensive medical procedures. They didn't have the reserves, mm-hmm. and next thing you know, they can't stay in business. So we have to do a better job creating a more competitive marketplace. And your idea is something that I think people should look at.
That's the answer,
right.
but at least it should be looked at.
Yeah, yeah. And what about, you know, when you look at, you know, healthcare is an issue in lots of businesses, obviously. But I noticed, Brendan, you have a lot of immigrants and refugees. What are some of the challenges you face in using people who are willing to work hard, who show up? You introduced me to a number of them.
Right. Well, I mean, if you look, we're all Italian Americans. And so 100 years ago, our ancestors, you know, they came to this country new. They didn't know how to speak the language. They had few opportunities. So we feel great that we're able to provide opportunities now, 50, 100 years later. 38% of our workforce is made up of immigrants and refugees. And the training is a big thing. But what I always say to people is, yes, the first generation may be costly. There may be some resources they need. It may cost us. But you're investing. You're investing in the second generation, the third generation. Some of my employees are going to have kids going to college. In the next generation, they could be starting businesses up. Who knows? I mean, some of the best risk takers are immigrants, because what's more risky than leaving your own country, moving to a strange place you don't speak a language, and starting a new life? So they're some of the best entrepreneurs, and some of them are our customers. So we feel very strongly about this. And one of the frustrations for us, we're on the E-Verify program, which where you verify the work authorization of anybody that is hired by you. And we'll interview someone that looks great, and they go through the interview process well, but they're not authorized to work in the United States, so we can't hire them. And there are certain jobs where we have jobs open and we need people to do that, but the people that are coming through, they can't, because they're not authorized, they can't work. So we know they're out there. Why would they be coming here? They're out there, they're probably working in the landscaping and restaurants and things like that. Why not have some kind of a immigration reform system so those people can get work visas or temporary permits or something like that, so they're not kind of in the underground?
Well, I agree completely. You know, we are really missing out on economic opportunities because we haven't been able to agree on comprehensive immigration reform. We have a lot of people who are working, as Brendan said, who are not authorized, but you know it, I know it. They are all over this state like every other state. They are paying into, a lot of them are, the Social Security system with no hope of ever realizing it unless we change the immigration rules. And we are, and I think Brendan's point's really an important one. We are turning down people who really want to work. I mean, they are here to work, and a lot of them now have children who are American citizens, and they are doing the best they can to try to make a good life for themselves and their families. And, you know, I think if we were to just go around this room, there are a lot of immigrant stories. You know, all my grandparents, you know, came over here, and, you know, my grandfather went to work in a lace mill in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and worked there until he retired at 65. He started when he was a teenager and, you know, just kept going. So I sit here and I think, well, you're talking about the second, third generation. I that's me.
Right.
That's you.
Yeah.
And we are saying to all these other people who want the same dreams and the same, you know, aspirations and the willingness to work hard, just like our families did, that, you know, no, we're not going to make it easy for you. We're not going to make it legal for you. And I just think that's such a short-term unfortunate outcome for us as well as for them.
I agree.
Yeah. Do you see that in your business too?
I don't. I just agree that the immigration problem is holding a lot of businesses back, holding a lot of families back. It's just not the right way to treat people, I don't feel.
It's a political thing. I mean,
we need a more comprehensive.
If all of us got in a table and sat down to figure this out, we could figure it out in probably, 20 minutes? But you get the politicians and they start breaking off into groups and they fight about it and nothing gets done. And maybe we should be the ones writing the legislation to get it done.
About educating our workforce. I have a back of a bowling alley, and for anyone who's seen a back of a bowling alley, it's not clean. We have grease, I have thousands of parts on each machine, and that takes training to understand that, and I'm still working through that training. I obviously didn't go to college for that, but I go and I take classes on it. I travel across the Midwest to learn that, and I am the mechanic sometimes. I have a couple guys who've been bowling there since the 70s who understand it. They help. And that's fortunate, because without them, without that kind of business family that I've created, it would be very difficult. And training that, taking that edge out to train your staff, and then, now they have this skill that could be valuable at multitude of places. But creating that loyalty to get them to, obviously stay with you, and have them enjoy what they're doing. So, and then it, comes back to, if they're a full-time employee, can we give them the full benefits to support their family? Does that leave enough left over to hire any more employees? So it's kind of a revolving circle that, these issues arise from.
Yeah. Well, I want to give everybody a chance to raise any other issue that you'd like to put on the table. Brendan's got us at the table solving problems, so we should we should keep going at them. Do you want to start, Amelia?
Sure. I think one of the big issues that we face is low wages. Particularly for the lower skilled individual, wages just haven't kept up. And it's, frankly, extremely difficult to invest in education or invest in a small business if you don't have the savings to even repair your car when it breaks down. And that's a definite challenge that we see among the people that we work with.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jennifer?
One thing, kind of going back to the Affordable Care Act, I was wondering if I have like a personal story with that. One thing that I sort of lose sleep at night about, when I opened Eden in 2003, I had the luxury of having my husband who had the benefits and the insurance and we're still on his insurance. A year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, so now I have a pre-existing condition. So if something were to happen with his job or insurance, or if the Affordable Care Act was repealed, I have a pre-existing condition. So that's something that weighs heavy on me.
And it should. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important features for millions of Americans in the Affordable Care Act is to prohibit insurers from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And that is an incredibly important change because, when I worked on healthcare reform back in the early 90s, there were so many people that I met when I traveled around the country who had some kind of pre-existing condition, mm-hmm. and they were priced out of the insurance market. And then they couldn't get the regular care they needed in order to deal with the pre-existing condition that they had. Mm-hmm. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, really, something that I still think about all the time. I see the faces of the people who told me their stories. So one of the many reasons why I will defend all of those important changes in the Affordable Care Act is because of somebody like you, Jennifer, where you are a perfect example of why we need to eliminate discrimination on the basis of pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And to go off that, my fiance has epilepsy. Same system. We're both still on our parents' insurance, fortunately, but that is, thankfully, and I hope it stays, is when it is time for us to go out and be even more adults and get our own insurance and that kind of thing, take care of our all of everything, that, you know, it's not an option to, you know, to say, oh, well, you know.
Right, you can go without insurance.
Yeah. Especially with, you know, anything mm-hmm. medical-wise. You know,
do you know how much her drugs cost? Do you have any idea?
Over $3,000 a month. And that's, I mean, and that's not seeing neurology, any, you know, doctors like that. So to see that, you know, thankfully, with the insurance package that the family has, it's, you know, it is affordable, you know, the way it is. But to leave that, I would be worried to, we haven't looked because we do have mm-hmm. a little more time before we have to do that. But I'd be worried on what is going to change and how that's going to hit.
Well, I asked you because one of the other problems we've got is we need to drive a harder bargain negotiating with drug companies about the cost of drugs. And a lot of what are called specialty drugs are now so expensive that people are really being deprived of them unless they have the kind of insurance that your fiancé has. But when you both hit 26 and you, under the Affordable Care Act, you've been protected, you no longer have that protection, then you really do have to scramble. And it's not, in my opinion, a burden you should bear alone. We need to do a better job in trying to get the price of prescription drugs, particularly for serious kinds of chronic conditions like epilepsy, more affordable. And it's just the height of ironies that we have the greatest pharmaceutical companies in the world. They invent all kinds of great drugs, and then they sell them more cheaply everywhere else in the world besides here, because everywhere else in the world demands that they negotiate a lower price.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, what's wrong with this picture? Our research institutions, our government, our FDA, our insurance companies, our businesses, we pay for all of that. And then individuals are disadvantaged because we don't drive a harder bargain so that Americans can get lower prices for the very same drugs that are being sold elsewhere. So, These are some of the problems that we still have to address in order to make healthcare truly accessible, affordable, high quality, which is what we all deserve to have. And I think that, you know, we've learned a lot in the last few years. We've seen some of the positives and some of the challenges, and we're just going to have to get around the table and get to work on that again, right? Did you want to add anything, Leslie?
Not really on insurance. I think I have two other things I wanted to talk about. One of them was equal pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understand that yesterday was
equal pay day.
Yes, that women would need to work that extra 104 days into mm-hmm. this year to equal the same amount of pay that a man made last year.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about that?
Well, we're going to, I hope, continue to push legislation that would make equal pay more enforceable.
Yes.
You know, some of you might remember the Lilly Ledbetter mm-hmm. law. I think it was the first law that President Obama signed, and it was because Lilly Ledbetter, who'd worked in a factory in Alabama and had been promoted to be a foreman, found out by accident that even though she had as many years or more and was doing exactly the same job, the two men who were the other two foremen were being paid more. And the Supreme Court, when she took her case, the Supreme Court concluded on a technicality that she wasn't entitled to back pay, but she was a very persistent advocate, and so the law was passed. And, you know, she didn't get the benefit of it. She never got all the back pay that she never saw because of the discrimination against her. But it did open the door to more enforceable provisions on equal pay. And it's something we just have to keep working on and keep demanding, because it is unfair. And a lot of the a lot of the reasons go to a sense that, you know, women may or may not stay with you, but all the evidence shows that women are really loyal employees, and we should be making it possible for women to be both good parents and good workers and not have to make a choice. So I think there's a lot that we have to keep doing, but stronger laws, you know, the Fair Pay Act, something that your former Senator Tom Harkin championed. We need to keep working on that, and we need to keep working on better enforcement. What about you, Katie? Anything else?
You know, as a small business owner, I'm not looking for handouts, but I also need to be able to run my business without a hand tied behind my back. So, you know, I just think that it gets a little disheartening when my small business is qualified in the same to the government small business that a $21 million revenue, 500 person company is qualifying against, and actual large corporations are getting tax credits I have zero access to. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about goals there?
Yes, and that's one of the goals that I have for tax reform, because there are a lot of credits and deductions that are skewed toward companies that are already successful, whose revenues are above a certain level, and that smaller businesses either don't know about in some instances, or find, as you did, you don't qualify. Right. So how do we try to level that playing field? And how do we try to provide actually a bit of more preference for small business going forward? How do we create a clearer path for you? And that, you know, that's at the local level, the state level, as well as the federal level.
Absolutely.
And so I will be rolling out kind of a package of recommendations, but that certainly is on the list, because it's one of the things that people have already talked to me about. It's just, it's really frustrating.
Right.
You've built this company. It's your labor and your intelligence that made it what it is, and you've got big plans for it. But you're being squeezed while other companies are given more opportunities, and that's not right.
Right. I'm so thankful to be able to have you listening to our issues today, but when it comes to the government, I feel like I have just no voice at all, and mm-hmm. so I really appreciate you taking all
right.
of that.
Well, I hope to be that voice, and that champion for you and others like you.
Thank you.
Bryce, last one.
Kind of, well, to go off that is, you know, I studied government in college, and I think everyone kind of understands parts of government, but that tax, you know, some people don't know the difference between LLC and corporation, incorporated, whatever it might be, but I find that difference too. You know, I'm a small town business, and I see huge corporations getting tax cuts, tax credits, anything, and then I look around and I go, you know. And then, you know, the same thing, and fortunately people, same thing, you know, we get new family, you know, tax, going to college, you get a tax credit, things like that. And then I see a big gap for the small business. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, you've gotten over the first hump of being just an individual. Now you're a company, but you're not a big company. So you don't quite get as much, but, you know, so it's like having the Cinderella stepsister type thing. I feel kind of like I'm a backseat. All the time, where, you know, in my community, the amount that I like to give back and everything, I would give so much more, and I would do so much more for my community if I saw that return to even, you know, simple things, you know, and they might be out there. Another thing is they might be out there, those tax credits, but I have no clue they're out there.
That's interesting.
So it's kind of that uneducated, like, mm-hmm. if I have to go out and seek every single tax credit or every, you know, reform, whatever it might be,
and how do you have time to
how do I have time to run my bowling center? So
right.
that's my big struggle is, you know, I rely a lot on my CPA,
yeah.
and
yeah.
but and they do a great job, but man, if I could have another full-time position to seek out that, find those little cracks and squeeze it out more.
But we should do more to help you do that. That's a really good point.
Right.
I mean, there should be, look, online, we should have much more information available so that, you know, you can seek out anything that you might be eligible for.
Right.
And I think we have to do more of that. I mean, that should be a government service, and it should be at the state level and the federal level, because it's so complex. And you're right, you know, everybody has to have somebody help them, but maybe you could even save on that if you could
right.
get insight into what might be available for you. So I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
We will look for that. Well, Brendan, let me end where I started. And you were telling me a little bit as we were walking around about how you piece together all the different forms of support to actually build this facility. Could you describe that? Because I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what your concerns are there. It takes a lot of effort to get all the tax credits and things to help your company grow. So to build this, the street that all the satellite trucks are parked on here, that was from a DOT RISE grant. So that opened up this development so that we could buy the land here and build the facility. We got some economic development assistance from the state of Iowa, and we had to, our obligation was to create jobs, a certain number of jobs. We've exceeded that in less than 2 years. We had 5 years to do that. We exceeded in less than 2 years. We got tremendous help in the city of Norwalk, and they gave us some tax assistance. All of that stuff requires forms and paper and things to fill out. I don't know how a small business person can do it. Luckily, we have the staff to do that. But that really enabled us to accelerate this the construction of this building by probably 3 or 4 years. And we built this building at a time when nobody was doing anything. It was the Great Recession, 2011, 2012. We provided 165 construction jobs while this was being built. Not to mention the jobs that exist here and that we're able to add more here. Part of the reason that we have a challenge in finding talent is because the economy here is so great. So there is a success story here too. I don't want to be all negative and say about challenges. One of the great successes is that the economy here in Central Iowa is doing so well that all of us are having a hard time finding employees because they have so many opportunities and choices. But it does hurt our growth because we need people to grow. So I'm trying to encourage all the Californians that don't have water to come here because we got plenty of water.
Well, I think we have a lot of reasons to be encouraging here. That's one of them. And I think as you look around this table and as you've heard the personal stories and the business stories from everybody, I'm with Brendan. It's really encouraging. Are there problems? Yes. But you can see people who have taken those problems head on and found their way through them and keep going and don't get, you know, either deterred or stopped in their tracks. And I think that's the spirit we want to focus on. We want to ignite again. We want people to feel that there are those opportunities, and we're going to try to make it possible for them to get there faster and to do more. Because we've got to get the economy growing, you know, from the bottom up. I mean, that's where not only the jobs are, but to go to the point you were making, we need more people with money in their pockets to buy more fruit and to go bowling more often and to buy your products. We need more people who feel like they can get out and spend a little bit more again, and we start that virtuous cycle where, you know, consumers begin to be a little more free with their spending because they can afford it. And you can't do that if people's wages are suppressed. I mean, Henry Ford understood that so long ago. You know, he got in trouble by other business leaders when he was first rolling out the first car, and he was paying the unbelievable sum of $5 a day. And all of his business friends said, you're going to destroy the labor market. You're paying too much. And he goes, well, who's going to buy my cars if I don't pay people? I mean, he understood in a very fundamental way. You got to give people a decent, you know, wage in order for them to contribute to the economy, in order to help your businesses grow, and that's how it's supposed to work. So I just can't thank you enough. I mean, this has been incredibly useful and educational to me, and I'm so grateful to you, and I feel like I want everybody, you know, to buy a lot of fruit and to see what they need online, and everybody needs to go bowling. Go over and see Bryce and stock up on lotions and potions, and you know, if you need to furnish rental, you know, talk to Leslie and Amelia. Keep doing the good work you're doing, trying to encourage people who feel, I think, pretty beaten down by circumstances in life, that right. You know, that there is a future waiting for them out there. So
well, thank you for coming here. I think sometimes we feel people don't listen to us, so it's really important for our leaders to engage with us and know about our struggles, also know about our successes. So I really appreciate you making the time to come here.
Thank you. Yes, well, let's give a round of applause to everybody at Capital City Fruit. Thank you all. So when are you open? When's your bowling alley? I'm going to be in Iowa a lot.
For the first time since probably February, I'm not opening the center. So I have an employee opening the center.
Oh.
Okay. I'm open 7 days a week.
Wow.
I open by, during the school year, I open by 4 o'clock. I'm usually open till about midnight every night. And then during the summer, we kind of scale back because we have the pool right down the street. But we're open half the week, and we do the same deals and everything. And
but
we
you
open...
have food there, too.
Oh, yeah. I have a full restaurant, a full bar and grill. And then.
And you do all that with two or three people?
Yep. Wow. I do that. I open and close every day.
And are you the chef as well?
Yeah. The nice thing is we're not gourmet. We, you know, a lot of things are frozen. We do use tomatoes. We do use lettuce. So there's a lot of fresh. But, you know, it's if you can't, you know, flip that burger just once.
Yeah.
That's the key. And then cold drinks, pop, and beverages.
Have you pulled a 300 yet?
I have. I have a few under my belt. But.
Whoa. So, I know we wanted to get a picture of the whole group, right, Matt? So, yeah, and then maybe after that we get your whole family to come up behind us and get another picture. Would that be okay?
Yep.
Great. Okay. So, should we just sit here or do you want us to stand up? Okay, so we all should stand?